very busy. Many important matters require a king's attention.
I'm king now. King now.
I am
king.
I am
king.
I am
kiss it.
I am
kiss it again.
I am
turn.
Your fingers or your
king
doesn't
fingers
discuss
your
battle plans.
He's one,
but
your fingers or your tongue.
I am the king. I'm telling mother. Oh.
Welcome to the Joffria podcast. My name's Bubba, and I've got some bad news and good news. The bad news, well, it's been a rough health week for us this week on the Joffria podcast. So for most of this feedback podcast about HBO's Game of Thrones Season 6, Episode 5, The Door, it's just going to be my voice. But at the end of the episode, we're going to have Mork and Catfish here for some Better Call calls. That's where we predict what's going to happen coming up later in the show. And more good news, our good friends, our hero, our brother-in-arms, Double M Matt Murdock has done a special one-off podcast, Winterfell. Please go to iTunes, go to Podcast Winterfell, download their most recent podcast entitled The Couch. It's really great. It also features somebody I like to call Double H. That's Holly Hunt Pants. Everybody knows her on Twitter. To make up for the fact that it's just my voice on this podcast tonight, I'm going to try to add as many little juicy details that you may not have noticed when watching The Door the first time through. Like, for example, after Mira, when she's trying to wake up Bran in the cave there and she yells, "We're all going to die," watch the scene with Bran and the Three-Eyed Raven there in Winterfell. You'll notice what's happening. That's right. Bran is able to see his breath from the cold in Winterfell, aka this vision in the past. And so it's like the present, Bran's present, is affecting his flashback. Not only is he hearing Mira's voice, but he's also feeling the cold that the evil White Walkers are bringing. It's that type of insight that you'll only get here because I have no life and I watch these episodes of Game of Thrones way too many times. Once again, my name's Bubba. You can reach me on Twitter at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim, at Fit and Trim on Twitter. I'm going to start off today, before I get to your feedback, with the biggest news out there in the Game of Thrones world, and that is the producers, the creators of the television show, Dan and Dave, told Entertainment Weekly that when they sat down with George R.R. Martin 2 years ago in a Santa Fe hotel room, Martin famously sketched out a very rough plan for how he intends to end the saga in the books. And Benioff and Weiss, they said that there were three holy shit moments, in their opinion, from the stuff that Martin told them. The first moment was Stannis Baratheon was going to sacrifice his daughter Shireen. And the producers put that moment into the show last season in season 5. The second moment was this, what we saw this week, Hodor's mind-bending origin story, where he found out that Hodor is how you say hold the door obnoxiously fast. But the third moment, apparently Benioff says it's from the very end, aka the end of the whole saga. And so what could be that third moment? Well, is it possible they're foreshadowing it in this fifth episode too? Remember, we were trying to find out what the hideous voice that Varys heard as his manhood burned in that fire all those years ago. What did the voice say and who was the voice? Is that perhaps the third shocking twist? And if it is, whose voice could it have been? I've heard some good people guessing that maybe somehow it's Bran. Bran talks to people in the past. Maybe he's actually saying something in the past. As Varys' manhood burns, what would he say? Ugh, gross. Why would Bran suddenly talk in a blood magic ritual? Je ne sais pas for all our French listeners, except to say he's really one of the few people we know who's out there speaking, who's out there talking to people. And that would be one way we could quote-unquote see it, because Bran seems to be the only one who's able to truly give us a flashback and see into the past. If you have a better idea of what that third holy crap moment is, let's hear it. Go ahead and write our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/doublepodcast. That's facebook.com/doublepodcast. Let's get to your feedback right now. We got a couple of podcast niceties I want to thank these people for. Tipsy Russell on Twitter, who's at Michael_Aaron. He said his Monday morning routine is to download 3 Game of Thrones podcasts, including ours, the guys at Bald Move, and our buddies at the Small Council podcast. Thank you so much, Tipsy. Now, he listed us last, so maybe he saves ours to listen to last. Save the best for last. Thank you so much. Also got this nice note from Steve Welling, who said, "Catfish needs to be put down like summer after this week's dire sickness-induced showing. CJGman68 has overtaken him in the ratings for my money. Now, Catfish came up strong. He's still sick. That's why he's not here on the feedback show. But he came up real strong last week in the episode review when he was really not doing well. And he came because he wanted to do it for you people, the double L's. Double L's? Loyal listeners. That's right. Let's get to some specific feedback about this episode we just saw, episode 5 of season 6, The Door. Peter from Australia, who's at Baga2007, the year he was born on Twitter. Peter says he gave this week's episode an 8.9 of what he likes to call double H's. Double H's? Heartfelt Hodors. The actor playing Joffrey in the play in Bravos made it look like Joffrey was a fool. He hopes the real King Joffrey never sees that blasphemous play. The actor who played Joffrey in the play can be contacted at CJGman68. Ouch. Another person who loved this episode was Write a Revolution, who's at Write a Revo on Twitter. They said, one of the best episodes ever. Loved it. Many tears at the end. Emoji with one solitary tear. Oh. We have JackalZXA, which is sure enough at JackalZXA on Twitter, said he's finally glad the show watchers get a taste of the Joffrey POV chapters in this week's episode. That Bravos he play, to be honest, when I tell my friends who haven't seen Game of Thrones, I'm going to tell them they can just skip season one and just watch that play to really get an idea of how it all went down in King's Landing. One of our true double L's, Jonathan Teglin on Twitter, he said, Game of Thrones did it again. I'm stunned. Oh my God. That episode made me jumping in my seat and also stop breathing. Jonathan, you sent this tweet a while ago. I pray that you have begun breathing again. I'll say this about my reaction. I started, as the whole cave sequence went down, I started sitting up a little bit more and more in my chair. And as I was doing it, I was very aware of, like, boy, I'm sitting up in my chair. This is ridiculously on the nose, but I do have to admit I did it. Our good friends at Geek Girl Soup, they said they loved Outlander this weekend and also Game of Thrones. They say both shows knocked them down. Their e-chip is fully functional. Hold the door. They say this is the saddest scene ever on Game of Thrones. That's our good buddies at Geek Girl Soup Podcast. Download them. Listen to them. Justin from Brooklyn, who's at IamKing_45. He said he didn't miss anything about King's Landing, which didn't appear in this week's episode. He says not one bit. Forgot those people even existed. The last thing he needs is more High Sparrow speeches. Justin, there's a hashtag you can put out at any time. Skip ahead! On our Facebook page, we got some notes on this week's episode. Graham Simonelli, he said, hoping the White Walkers win next week so that the show's over ASAP. Youch. That's maybe somebody like Catfish who was kind of down on the episode. Steven Olberg, and I hope I pronounced that right, on Facebook said, he's glad to see that the record is finally being straightened on this week's episode with that Bravosi play. Sean Gregan, who's at HeyRef on Twitter, said, in his honest opinion, this is the first time that the books have been spoiled by the show, in his opinion. Well, I would say there was John's resurrection a couple weeks back, but hey, if that's how you feel, Sean, many of us who read the books kind of knew John was going to come back. So if this is the first time you've been spoiled, sadly, I have to say, get ready. It's going to keep coming. Our great friend over in the wonderful kingdom of Switzerland, he said this week's episode of Game of Thrones, The Door, was fine, but it was that amazing last 20 minutes that he loved. He said our podcast was great. Thank you so much. And he liked the guest host. He forgot his name. Sorry. So who did sit in with Catfish and I? I can't remember either. Finally, we had John Zager, who actually preferred week 4's ending of Daenerys. He said he preferred that as his favorite ending because it was not filled with gut-wrenching sadness. One word, Dracarys. I'm glad so many of you guys liked this episode. I really liked it. I gave it 9 out of 10. And I just want to say real quickly, though, I hope listeners aren't frustrated that Catfish and I have not agreed once. We haven't agreed once on any of these episodes. I was really down on the first two. He liked them a lot. I really loved the third episode. He was like, meh. The fourth episode, he was gangbusters about. I didn't connect with any of it emotionally. And then we flipped, and I loved episode 5, and he was like, whoa, talking boring. I hope you appreciate that those are our honest opinions. We record right after the show to get it up as quickly to you as possible. Our saying here at the Joffrey Podcast is either be the best or be first. And since we knew we weren't going to be the best podcast, we were going to be first. Holla. I hope you appreciate that our podcast is honest to goodness, true feelings. I have to be honest, I listen to some of the millions of other Game of Thrones podcasts out there, and there are some where I think these people just love anything. Even the book podcast, there's some people who are like, I love everything he ever wrote. And I'm like, did you really read that chapter? George R. Martin's a great author. He's done so many great things. But boy, you got to be careful around these book lovers. I found out sometimes when I'm like, well, boy, that preview chapter, kind of a snooze, and oh boy. There's only one way to appreciate the show and the chapters to some people, and that's unadulterated love. And we hope you appreciate our honest opinions. Ladies and gentlemen, we come together today to mourn, celebrate, and pour one out for our good friend, Willis. I had a note from Raymond Charles on Twitter, at AlphaCentaurian1. He said, there were not enough tissues in the world, his allergies were killing him, and now he has lost Hodor to boot. Jake Ponser, who's at JPonser93, said, will Summer and or Hodor return as a wight? Would we want him to return as a wight? It might be too sad. Or hashtag too soon. Jan Martinek. Or Jan Martinique. Or Jan Martinique. I always get confused every time. He gave me this little tweet. He said, six little direwolves went out to dine. One got stabbed and then there were five. Five little direwolves went to a wedding tour. One got and then there were four. Four little direwolves ran from Ramsay, but the Umbers beheaded one, and then there were three. Three little direwolves saw the White Walker crew, but then the whites got one, and then there were two. I'm going to go over some feedback now that I call Bran's mistake. But I just want to say, hey, I want to say that I've had a better call on this, and that I've been saying Bran was going to change the past since A Dance with Dragons came out. Sadly, you would have to hear that on a podcast, Winterfell Past Edition, because I like to keep the Joffrey podcast mainly show-centric, except for when we read those wonderful Joffrey POV chapters. But I promise you, I have been calling it, but does this mean Bran actually changed the past, or because it always seemingly happened, everything has happened. The ink is dry. I feel like I called that one early. I want to go to our good friend, the Uncle Q, a true double L, at the Uncle Q on Twitter. He posted a picture of Bran and Mickey Mouse in his role as the Sorcerer's Apprentice, and he just said, shaking his head at these two fools. Just as Mickey screwed up as the Sorcerer's Apprentice, so too did Bran. On Facebook, we had Heather Vale, who wrote, she was a bit confused by the continued visions after the Three-Eyed Raven told Bran that he and his crew had to leave. But is it possible the Three-Eyed Raven is still trying to show Bran everything by warging into Bran to continue the visions post-mortem? So is it possible that, like in the classic movie, spoiler alert, being John Malkovich, that multiple people, a.k.a. Bran, is in himself and so is the Three-Eyed Raven? I don't know. Maybe the Three-Eyed Raven will go a little, spoiler alert, Obi-Wan Kenobi, and just keep hanging around and keep saying, psh, hey, use the Force. We'll have to see. We had some questions on our Facebook page about why Mira was trying to wake Bran up and help. In reality, quote-unquote, in the present timeline, he's a crippled boy who couldn't really do anything to help them fight off the whites and White Walkers. And we had a couple of answers. Aaron Marie said, I took it that she wanted Bran to wake up to warg into Hodor, either to have Hodor move Bran or warg into Hodor and have him fight these whites while she moved Bran. Aaron writes that, if I remember correctly, she also kept saying that they needed Hodor. I don't think that she knew that he would be able to do so while he was out there vision questing. Matt says he thinks Mira was just shouting in panic. but eventually she switched from Wake Up to, quote, Worgen to Hodor, because she knew Hodor would be more useful in a fight. Matt continues, he says, the Raven had already seen this happen. He knew that Bran had already affected the timeline. That's why he calmly told Bran to listen to his friend. From a storytelling standpoint, it was essential that Bran heard Mira screaming. It bridged the gap between both worlds and allowed Bran to affect the past. Matt finishes up by saying, I also don't think that Bran was controlling Hodor the whole time in the present timeline. He says, when Hodor's eyes flash white, that's when Hodor was back in control. It was like a little kick in the pants and then Hodor was okay. Matt believes that it was Hodor who held the door on his own because he's been waiting for that moment ever since he was touched by something greater decades before. And Holly Hunt Pants agreed with him. We had a couple more questions about Bran's boo-boo. David Smith said, Bubba, do you think the Night King's mark on Bran, which enabled the Night King to enter the Children of the Forest's cave, will allow him to take down the wall? Is it possible that the Night King wants Bran to escape, and therefore the White Walkers can get through the wall? So the idea is that Bran was marked. You are unclean. He touched you. And so the idea is that because Bran had this kind of mark on him, the magic which kept the evil whites and evil White Walkers out of the cave was suddenly gone. So a lot of people have been suggesting, well, if Bran still has this mark on him and Bran goes past the wall, is it possible that will be the undoing of the wall keeping the White Walkers at bay? One thing I would say is that, book alert, in the books they talk an awful lot about how the wall has a bit of magic in it, and that magic is really the thing keeping all the zombies and the White Walkers outside of the realm. In fact, in the book, it's because the Night's Watchmen bring those dead bodies through the wall themselves. That's how, in season one, those zombies were able to wake up and attack Commander Mormont. Because the show has never mentioned the wall having magic capabilities, I tend to think that Bran's mark of the Night King will not be the cause of it. I can certainly be wrong, but that's my own take on it. If you want to give yours, once again, tweet out the hashtag JoffreyPodcast in a tweet and let us know, or go to the Facebook page and get the discussion started there. There have been a lot of questions about Bran's triple B, his Bran boo-boo, about how he theoretically doomed Hodor to this existence, and they're like, well, how did it work? I heard a great person theorize the other day that Bran was warging through the Hodor in the past and using him to reach back to Hodor in the future, or the present timeline, and that seems like a great way that Bran might have been able to be in two places at once, in a vision and warging into Hodor. But I would say I'm not sure we need a step-by-step instruction on this. I'm reminded, spoiler alert, of a great moment in the TV show Twin Peaks. And so if you haven't seen Twin Peaks, I'll try to set it up. If you have seen Twin Peaks, this is one of the most famous, I consider the best moment in the show's entire run. This moment is when the killer kills again, and we, the audience, find out the identity of the evil killer. Well, we leave that scene and we go across town to a place where some other people are. And yet these other people, they should have no idea that the killer's killed again. But somebody starts crying. Another person looks really sad or confused. And it's like this moment has somehow affected everybody. And it creates such a great visual moment and emotional moment for the audience that it somehow makes emotional and thematic sense. Even if logically, once again, these characters on the other side of town should have no idea that this tragedy, this killer, is struck again. And that's my favorite moment in that TV show. And this moment here, where the past and the present combine to create just a true tragedy, I hate to say it like this, it's one of my favorite moments of the show. I just love tragedy. Let's leave that depressing Triple B Bran boo-boo, and let's go across the narrow sea and talk about Daenerys. She was such a big part of Episode 4. Peter in Australia gave us another tweet. He said, all the time Dany has been with the Dothraki, what's her dragon been doing? Sleeping? What would Drogon have been doing? Well, I would say if we remember Season 1 and the end of it, apparently out there somewhere south of the Dothraki Sea, the Lazarine people, the Lamb people, hang out. If you're a dragon and you need to get your energy back up, I think eating some delicious lamb might be the ticket. Everybody knows gyros are great. Speaking about Daenerys, Jake Ponser had an idea, and he sent it out on Twitter, and I just think it's great. I want to hear what you guys think about it. Jake wrote, "I like the idea of Dany having a red priestess with her. It creates another parallel between her and Jon Snow, because Jon now has a red priestess himself in Melisandre." He says, "Both Jon and Daenerys made drastic changes where they ruled, and they were largely disliked, and both were reborn this season. Jon literally after being stabbed to death, and Daenerys reborn in the fire, as she's so keen to do." Jake goes on further and says, "If this new Red Priestess knows Varys' story," which he believes Varys' personal story of losing his manhood should be one that shouldn't be well known, he wonders if this new Red Priestess also knows about Jon's resurrection. The new Red Priestess called Dany the one that was promised. Maybe that can be turned into the princess that was promised. And he's wondering if this new Red Priestess will maybe mention Jon at some point this season as the prince. Ooh, that sounds like a Better Call Call. We're going to have some great ones coming up. We only got one bit of feedback about the Iron Islands this week. I wonder if that means that people weren't sold on it, or possibly just all the other scenes were so much stronger that it's easier to connect with them. But our great friend Court on Twitter, who's at Jendeveve, that's J-E-N-N-D-E-V-E, she wrote, "Yay, Theon and Yara outsmarted a poor man's pacey witter. That dude's a douche." Court also sent some feedback about Sansa. I want to throw this out. I love throwing out points and not answering them. I want you to answer them on our Facebook page. But Jon has returned from the dead, and everybody talked about, ooh, how this would change him, how this would change him. From my point of view, I'm not so sure Jon has really changed that much on the show. And it feels even crazier that Jon now feels like a supporting player in Sansa's story, which I suppose is fine. But when somebody comes back from the dead, you don't imagine he's going to suddenly be like, "Whatever you say, little sis, let's go." Anyway, Court did have this feedback about Sansa. She says she effing loves Sansa this season. Now that Sansa's got Brienne riding with her, no longer anyone's victim or puppet. Geek Girl Soup also backed up this saying. They said Sansa needs to start training with Brienne so she can fight like all the other double S's. Super Starks. Sarvesh on Twitter asked us the question, as well as our good buddies at Westeros History. They said, "With Vale troops at Moat Cailin, is Peter Baelish trying to carve his own kingdom in the north, Riverlands and Vale?" Well, let me say, Sarvesh, you are really getting to the heart of the matter here. While not truly any sort of leader in the Riverlands, the fact that Littlefinger is the Lord of Harrenhal, ding! That's one. He pretty much controls Robb and Arryn. That means he pretty much controls one of the Seven Kingdoms, the Vale. And if we trust what he told Cersei last year, even if he was kind of spinning Cersei, it definitely sounded like he wanted to take an army up and wipe up whatever was left after Ramsay fought Stannis. Heck yeah. He wants a second kingdom, the North, that'd give him two kingdoms and that great area of the Riverlands. Littlefinger is gathering big power. Court had even more feedback from Twitter. She said, "In the Bravos, she thought it was all fun and games until they started mocking Lord Eddard Stark." She said, "Not here for it either, Arya." And so Court is ready for Arya to do a massive rewrite on that play. Court wants them to scrap it and start over. Reboot. Ian Keen on Twitter said, "That Bravosi play that Arya watched, that's the way he remembers things going down. He doesn't know about us. Like I said earlier, that play, why watch season one if you could just watch that 3-minute reenactment of season one? Saves you all that time." Raymond Charles has a great question on Twitter. He says, "Is Double S Arya being set up to assassinate someone by someone she wants to assassinate?" Now, Raymond, that is a great question. He also sent it to Brendan Beefish, Blackfish on Twitter. I will say this. I think that would be a wonderful twist if Cersei is like, "Hey, this play over in Braavos is mocking me. Let's wipe them out." But I don't think the show has the time to go there. So while I think that would be a great twist, Raymond, I'm going to say no. I do not believe Cersei hired this hit on actress version of Cersei. You've probably been sick of me talking all this time, so let me bring in Catfish and Mork for their Better Call calls. Afterwards, I'll jump in and read some Better Call calls from you, our Double L loyal listeners. So, we're going to have our Better Call calls, and it's going to be a Night's King edition. Where will the Night's King be at the end of this season? Mork, will he be north of the wall, south of the wall? And if he's south of the wall, you got to tell us how he's going to get there. So let's go to you, guest Mork, first. How's he going to get there?
All right. He will definitely be south of the wall. He will be staring down the gates of Winterfell.
Whoa.
And he'll make it south by creating a... he's going to go over the wall.
Over the wall?
Over the wall.
How?
The wall. He's going to make a ramp.
A ramp?
A ramp out of his zombies. Just traipse right up. There's no one there. It's only Ed Commander that's going to stop him. That's it.
Love it. That would be a great... Let's go to you, Catfish. Your Better Call call about the Night's King edition.
I think that's completely impractical. The zombie bridge. I'm going to say they're going to build...
Gonna get the Night's Watch to pay
for it. No. it's obviously not going to be a zombie bridge. It's going to be a zombie catapult. Okay? Uh-huh. They're going to build a catapult on zombies and then catapult them one at a time over.
The Night King is not getting catapulted. He's just going to fucking glide right in.
No. He's going to be catapulted. He's going to have a chair, a throne of zombies. That's the throne's going to get catapulted. Okay. It's not like he's just being thrown out there. He's going to have a throne.
What about his horse?
I've been through the winter on a horse with no name.
I got two words for that.
Let's hear it. Mm-hmm.
Zombie catapult.
Okay.
All right. Fair. And my Better Call call.
Or horsepult.
My Better Call call is, maybe it isn't that great of a call if everybody predicts it, but I'm agreeing with you two. I think the Night's King is going to be south of the wall by episode 10. And how's he going to get there?
Yeah, that's the question.
It's not going to be by catapult. It's not going to be by zombie ramp, okay. Even though those are both great ideas. What did we always hear? What have they talked about a couple times on the show? The first time they mentioned White Walkers.
Flea Bottom.
They mentioned ice spiders. They're saving up the effects money, even though they blew a lot tonight on these zombies. They're saving up the effects money.
It's okay. It is okay. You know what? Only one can be right. There can be only one.
There can be only none.
Zombie catapult. Zombapult.
Now I want to get to some of your Better Call calls, because let's be honest, you're a lot smarter than we are, especially if you read that most recent brutal iTunes review. Ouch. Tessa French wrote on our Facebook page her Better Call call. She said, there is no way Bran and Mira could survive out there alone, even if they weren't being chased by hundreds of ice zombies. Her Better Call call this week is that we see the appearance of book character. Now, so many people know, because I talk so much about the books on Podcast Winterfell, so many people want me to bring this into the Joffrey podcast, but I like keeping the two things separate. Maybe at the end of this season, I'll bring in some book knowledge. I really actually hope some of those more book-focused podcasts would talk about how what the show is doing might play out in the books. I haven't heard a great job from other podcasts doing that, so maybe in the future I'll start jumping in on that. But for right now, I'm going to try to keep this book knowledge separate, if that's okay. And we got one final Better Call call from somebody on Twitter who's at Lil Andy or Jenny. That's L-I-L, Lil Andy or Jenny on Twitter. And his Better Call call says, episode 10 reveals the Night King's true identity, His Grace King Joffrey. His double B's, baby blues, are a clue. Thank you so much. Boy, you people give me a lot of strength, because I can be down on the show. We have not had His Grace in so long, and when we do get him, we get him with somebody who, let's be honest, should have used protection on his junk. But I'm hoping, you know, I'm praying, and at the end of the season, we're going to have some great non-boring, the boring scenes, and we're going to have some great Joffrey POV chapters, which I really think will make this whole season worthwhile. So we're going to let Catfish escape. He's sick. I'm still a bit sick. Thank you very much, Mork, for coming in.
And
for
exposing yourself to getting sick.
For the,
that's why I'm here.
For the feedback show, go ahead and let's give our Twitter handles one more time. My name is Bubba. You can reach me on Twitter at Fit and Trim. That's FitNTrim at Fit and Trim on Twitter. Or
Mork at Extraordinary. That's Extraordinary with the W in front of the final Z.
Completely right. And this is Catfish. You can always hit me up at CJGman67. Always reminding CJGman66, I'm coming for you.
I know. Thank you guys so much. We're all sick, so we're going to end it. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys.